So we're reading from the Nectar of Instruction, Srila Rupa Goswami.
Dadati prati grinati guyam makyati pritchati bhunte bhojayati chaiva satpidam pritilaksanam.
Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, refilling one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and offering prasad are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. Purport. In this verse, Srila Rupa Goswami explains how to perform devotional activities in the association of other devotees. There are six kinds of activities. One, giving charity to the devotees. Two, accepting from the devotees whatever they may offer in return. Three, opening one's mind to the devotees. Four, inquiring from them about the confidential service of the Lord. Five, honoring prasad or spiritual food given by the devotees. And six, feeding the devotees with prasad. An experienced devotee explains, and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. This is guyam agyati prichati. So it's not that a devotee is alone with Krishna, but rather the devotee becomes very close and intimate with the Vaishnavas, much more so than generally is the case in the material relationships that exist in this world, where everyone has his privacy, where everyone has his fence, where everyone has his privacy circle, his limits, his borders, and sorry, I don't know you, so you cannot talk to me, kind of mood, right? Book distributors, they ignore that. They step right through these privacy lines and people are shocked. This cannot be happening. This is not possible. It shocks them. But amongst Vaishnavas, we see that the relationships are meant to be of a different nature. They are meant to be close and intimate. It may not be so in our present... in our present spiritual movement, because we are not prema bhaktas. But if we would be, if we would be devotees on a level of prema, then really such open, positive, non-envious exchange could be there. Now, in our present state, we are associating in the material world, and we are all at different levels of advancement. Srila Prabhupada sometimes said that our movement, ISKCON, is like a hospital. And actually all our patients, some are in a better condition than the others, and they're helping the others. But somehow or other, it's a hospital full of patients, where patients help patients. Because devotees at different levels of advancement may help. Of course, Nitya Siddha devotees are of a different nature. Or Sadhana Siddha, those who are Siddha, Siddha Bhaktas, devotees who are fully at the platform of perfection, all right, they may not be considered as patients. But otherwise, patients are helping patients. And therefore, we cannot expect that our relationships are completely fully developed. So we should not be disappointed when the relationships amongst Vaishnavas are not one of like real complete love and trust. And when we see that in our movement not yet that full love and trust is realized, then we should not think that it is just because we have socially failed. Rather, it is that simply the spiritual world has not fully manifest amongst us. Srila Prabhupada says this guyam akiti prichati, or it means an experienced devotee explains and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. Guyam means what is hidden, hidden akiti prichati, that will be shared, one's intimate, hidden feelings, experiences are being shared. Because a Vaishnava has to rise above the platform of duplicity. Duplicity is something required in the material world, but on the spiritual plane, duplicity is a real problem. It is actually one of the activities that can really block our spiritual advancement. And it is important that a Vaishnava is not only truthful in what he says, that he doesn't speak any lies, but that he's just truthful about what he's experiencing. Because then one can actually take shelter of the Vaishnavas. If we are on the platform of pretending, always playing a part for everyone, and always, then we are very alone. Because then we never share our real self with anybody else. So we have to come to that point where we just can share wherever we are, whatever we are going through with other Vaishnavas, because then we get the shelter of the Vaishnavas. So this guyam akita prichati is very important, because without the shelter of the Vaishnavas, it's not possible. Srila Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is saying, Durgame patime indasya skalat padakatir muhu yakripa svastidanena santa santavalambanam. He said, my path is very difficult, my feet are slipping again and again. Therefore, with the stick of the mercy of the Vaishnava for my support, I can somehow or other carry on this path. Yeah. So, interesting that he says my feet are slipping again and again. And who can say that he has a perfect track record? It is very rare. Never a slip, never a moment of weakness. Never. It's very, very rare. Some may slip again and again. And then, okay, maybe there are no gross slips, that one is not slipping with the four regulative principles. But then we slip in so many other ways. We make so many other mistakes on the path. More subtle mistakes, where again we come under the influence of the lower nature. So all these things are taking us away from the path of pure devotion, pure devotional service. So, but by taking shelter of the Vaishnavas, we automatically get our true position in the association of the Vaishnavas. If we are trying to act that we are quite advanced and we are not, then we are not getting the proper mercy that we require. We're just cutting ourselves off. So this taking shelter is a essential element. Giving charity to the devotees is also important. That is, always just give and share with devotees, because by doing that we can somehow or other overcome our deep-rooted material attachments. We just give. We must learn to give rather than to take. Just like Jayananda. Jayananda was Prabhupada's dear disciple who had done so many wonderful things. And Jayananda, he joined in San Francisco, and somehow or other Jayananda was 10 years older than everybody else. And Jayananda was having a profession. He was driving a taxi. And he was making good money. So Jayananda would buy the devotees whatever they needed. He would buy them clothes and then give it to them as a gift. Whatever they would need, Jayananda would be there and give. For himself, he never bought anything. He wouldn't spend money on himself. He would buy clothes from the Salvation Army, a pair of pants for $1 and something like that, because he didn't want to spend money on himself. Some people, there's the story that they told him to go and, you know, you have to buy some decent clothes. You cannot just buy these $1 pants any longer. So they sent him to a shop and he put on these pants and he saw that, like, the price, and he thought, God, how can I spend so much money on myself? I can't do it. So he just put over his old pants over the new pants and tried to walk out of the shop, and he got caught. And anyway, the whole thing came to the court quite fast in America. A few weeks later, he was in the court. And in the court, he explained the whole story. And he explained to the judge how he was a monk and how he'd given his whole life and how he just, how they forced him and how he just couldn't tolerate to spend so much money. And the way he explained it was so sincere and so feelingly that the shop detective who had arrested him and who was there as a witness, that he said, Your Honor, I will pay for those pants. And in that way, he didn't get convicted. Yeah. And somehow or other, Jayananda was such a devotee who gave himself completely. Giving in charity means really we must give ourselves in charity. Giving things in charity, the fruits of our labor in charity is one thing, but the still greater gift is to give ourselves in charity, to dedicate our life to the well-being of others, and not be so concerned what's going to become of me, what will I achieve. I have my plans, I want to do so many things. If I become the servant of everyone else, then there will be no time left for me to do my things. Sometimes we have to do my things. We have to do. That is true. But the principle is giving in charity, the highest and greatest thing is to give ourselves. I thought myself that how to have a balanced life, a balanced spiritual life. And I thought we should have a balanced spiritual life between three factors. One is our personal bhajan or our personal practice. Another one is our health and our peace of mind. And the third is the preaching mission, to do something for the preaching mission. And these three must be there. And if we are not doing those three, how can we be satisfied? How can we be complete? Then we are not complete. Somehow or other, the bhajan, our personal well-being, and the mission. These three interests must be there in our life, and we must somehow or other think about how to look after them. And it means that you cannot always look after all three simultaneously. It will mean that sometimes we put energy in bhajan, sometimes we put energy in the body, sometimes or in peace of mind, sometimes we put energy in our preaching. That is the that is the nature of giving ourselves in charity, not just, you know, just give yourself and then nothing left. These three considerations must be there, so we must look after our own personal well-being. But not at the expense of ourselves. Anyway, the nature of trying to be balanced is that one regularly gets imbalanced and then one has to recover the balance. That is one nature of being balanced. Okay? There's no such thing as always being perfectly balanced. It doesn't exist. Okay? One who thinks that he'll always be perfectly balanced is a dreamer. That's not reality. Reality. To be balanced means to try to be balanced and to adjust. And you notice, oh, now I put a little. Now I went a little too far in this direction. Now, a little bit on the other side. Can you say it more loud? Equilibrium. Equilibrium, yeah, balance, equilibrium, yeah, exactly.
Balance is so difficult to
read. Yeah, but it is a matter of like on a bicycle. When you're riding on a bicycle, sometimes you lean a little this way, then lean a little bit the other way. If you look at bicycles carefully, you see that they're not like all the time like this. They go like...
So this personality of Krishna...
Yeah, Krishna is the balancing factor. It is Krishna that keeps us like in balance. Without Krishna, there is no balance at all. Without Krishna, everything gets upside down, slowly. In the beginning, without Krishna, it looks that life is going on nicely. And then and you think, well, I've got it under control. But it is not like that. I compare life to an elephant, you know, and I say sometimes you're on top of the elephant and sometimes the elephant's on top of you. Yeah. Yeah. So it's and you feel it when you start sliding down and you hang on the side and you have to try and get back on there. And every once in a while you get under the elephant. It's intense. What to do? Then it takes a while to recover. Yeah. But Vaishnavas are very precious. Devotees are very precious people. That one should always appreciate, because these devotees, they carry the blessings of Krishna. They have pleased Krishna. They are pleasing Krishna. And therefore, Krishna is favoring them. And anybody who turns towards a devotee, he will be favored. There's no doubt about it. So if whatever we do, if we have this good intelligence, never to underestimate the importance of a devotee, and always be appreciative, generous, kind, and so on towards the devotees, then somehow or other we'll get blessings, tremendous blessings, and then Krishna will make some arrangements for us. Because ultimately we all need some openings, we all need some favorable arrangements. And I'm saying, it's not so easy to just step into the Sankirtan movement and say, here it is, here's the process, now just surrender. Yeah, right, but you know, I am who I am, and it's not so easy. But then, Krishna makes an opening. He may send someone. Just like... When I became involved seriously with the Hare Krishna movement, I found it not so difficult, not so easy. At first I was in India, and they were really like pushing like anything. It's like I stood in front of the deities and they were pushing me, dance, dance. Like, you know, come on, you know. It's like, I'll dance when it's happening, you know, but it's got to happen at least, right? It can't just sort of dance, dance, you gotta dance. It's more spaghetti western type of stuff. Dance, dance. So I couldn't relate to it, and I thought it was too pushy. But the devotees were quite personal. Then in India, they were taking a lot of interest in one's own, in the person they were dealing with. But my visa ran out, and I came back to Europe. And when I came back to Europe, then the mood in the temple was quite different. It was like very impersonal and very rigid. It was really like, and I would have not made it, right? People would talk about the process of Krishna consciousness, but there was no one to, no human interaction from, how are you? That was not, that was Maya, that was not done, right? And I just couldn't really, I couldn't handle that. And there was one devotee from America, a black devotee, black-bodied devotee, and everyone thought he was strange. And he would ask people, how are you? And I liked him. Yeah, immediately. I said, wow, a human being. That made the whole thing possible for me, you know, that you could be human in this movement. So Krishna made an arrangement, he made an opening for me. Yeah? And I had hepatitis in India, and the result was that I was on a heavy diet and no ghee, right? No halva. So it's a great disaster when you join and there's no halva, especially in those days that was really too much, no halva. So my friend, he was cooking anyway quite a bit. So he cooked some nice raisin bread for me, which was full of dried fruit, so it was pretty good. And so instead of halva, I had that. So by his mercy, I survived. He made an opening for me. He just made it something sustainable. And when they made me next in charge of the Mongol Arctic suites, then I knew I was going to survive in Krishna consciousness. Although I had to deliver those Mongol Arctic suites for the lunch program every day, which was tough. But anyway, before I was a devotee, I had a younger brother who would always keep his all the chocolate that we would get for Saint Nicholas. You get your, in Holland, you get your name in letters, you know, the initials of your name, in chocolate letters. And I would eat mine on the 5th of December itself, right? But, which was the night you got him. But my brother would keep him forever. He would never eat it, you know, and the same, he would just keep it. And he would guard it like anything. And so I would hollow them out. I would go in there with a knife and cut out the bottom, right? Like this. Yeah. So I had practice and experience, so I did the same with the Mongol Arti sweets. So I did well. So maybe these are small things, you know. But for me at the time, they were not so small. They were not so small then. They were just the little thing that I needed for my senses to sort of be able to deal with it. Right? So Krishna makes arrangements for us. And the more we please Krishna's devotees, then somehow or other Krishna always make an arrangement for us, no matter how strong or weak we are. But he'll create an opening for us. That is the result of the blessings of a Vaishnava, if one is not so strong. Therefore, you must be very careful for the Vaishnavas. very careful in how we deal with the Vaishnavas. And that is actually the principle that we are discussing here. You have more of this tea?
Okay.
When a devotee distributes prasad, remnant of food offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to maintain our spirit of devotional service, we must accept this prasad as the Lord's grace received through the pure devotees. Mahaprasada Govinde Nama Brahmani Vaishnavi Svalpa Punya Vatanrajan Visvasana Vajayate. One who has no faith in the prasadam of Lord Govinda, such a person can never get the benefits of devotional service. This prasadam is very important. Chaitanya Charitamrita is describing the nature of prasadam and is saying that actually Krishna has personally taken this prasadam or the bhoga and put it back on the plate. It has been, that he doesn't say in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but that's elsewhere described. Anyway, Krishna has personally tasted it and touched it with his lips, and therefore this prasadam is now different. It is what was ordinary foodstuff has become transformed. It is now really spiritually potent, and because whatever is spiritual is fully surcharged with the potency of Krishna and automatically makes one attached to Krishna. Therefore prasadam makes us attached to Krishna, right? So it's very wonderful. It's a very important thing, of course. So we must share prasadam with the Vaishnavas. Again, maybe not always keep it for ourselves, but give. Yeah? Give. Giving is a big thing. Yeah? Some people give away prasad. Very nice. I got some today. That was nice. Srila Prabhupada writes, even in ordinary social activities, these six type of dealings between two loving friends are absolutely necessary. For instance, when one businessman wishes to contact another businessman, he arranges a feast in a hotel and over the feast openly expresses what he wishes to do. He then inquires from his business friend how he should act, and sometimes presents are exchanged. Thus, whenever there is a dealing of priti or love and intimate dealings, these six activities are executed. Yes. So, that is also important. How Srila Prabhupada is explaining that these activities are characteristics of love, and how we have to learn. We just don't know. We just come from this material relationship, where we are like dogs, right? Row, bark at each other. No, nah, not interested. Leave me alone, and so on. And different barks, different, very, very envious, not at all appreciative of each other. What are so-called normal relationships are envious relationships. And everyone's thinking about everyone. Who's this guy? Who's that? The whole world is just thinking, this one's that, that one's this. And people are just full of distrust and so on. So amongst Vaishnavas, that gradually has to disappear. In the previous verse, Srila Rupa Goswami advised that one should renounce worldly association. I guess I got a little less light now. And keep company with the devotees. Sangha jagat satu vritti. Thanks.
Is it better?
Yeah. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been established to facilitate these six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. So that's very important that we just try to really change our mood in this movement. So it's a big challenge to live together and to be together. Somehow or other, Hare Krishna temples are, they are extraordinary. That's one word for it. In all respects, you know, they're non-different from the spiritual world. They're a bit chaotic, right? They're full. You know, there's people, many times, lots of people doing all kinds of things in a small space, right, relatively. Just squeeze all together on the floor, eating. So many things are going on. And it's all happening around that prasada. It's like big time event. So many things are there. But the most wonderful thing is when devotees are actually very kind and gentle. So we have to become kind and gentle. We have to practice and generous. When Srila Prabhupada started what he called the Sunday Love Feast, it was a 15-course feast, 15 preparations, and each prep was special. And even in late 70s, even maybe in 80s, it was like that. Somewhere along the line it changed and it became less and less. But it was 15 preps. They would start cooking Saturday. Saturday already doing the sweets and the whole thing, and then Sunday serving it, doing the rest. And big thing, big, big feast every Sunday for free. Yeah. So it represents the mood of the Vaishnava who gives costless mercy. Costless mercy means you get so much and you just wonder, like, I didn't really deserve all that. Yeah, I mean, what? And they're giving all this and not even charging. That's how it should be, actually. Maybe it has changed a bit, that mood. But we see that when Srila Prabhupada was there, that's how it was. Very great generosity. And that is really how this movement will conquer. We will conquer by extraordinary generosity. That is the nature of Lord Chaitanya. That is Lord Chaitanya's particular approach. Extraordinary generosity. So that is the underlying principle of this whole verse. Is Namo Maha Vadanyaya Krishna Prema Padayate. It is the Namo Maha Vadanya, this most magnanimous generosity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the underlying principle. That in all areas one has to give. One has to give in charity, one has to then also receive in charity. That means appreciate someone else. Oh, how nice. Oh, you brought those shoes. Oh, good. No. Oh, how nice. Oh, you brought shoes. Oh, very nice. Thank you so much. Appreciate also. Yeah. Not just... because appreciate the good intentions of someone. And then also wear it. Yeah? Even wear them. Yeah. As out of reciprocation, This is all part of generosity, of reciprocating and of appreciating. Not one's own ideas. No, allowing others to enter in one's life and appreciating them. That is all part of being generous, of generosity. So generosity is there in giving, generosity is there in receiving. It's also very, if one is receiving in appreciation, in real appreciation, and trying to appreciate, that is generosity. If you receive in a miserly way, then you think, well, you know, you could have asked me first what I like, you know. I mean, you just give me something without asking me, what is this, you know? I mean, you could also respond that, no, that's miserly. That's miserly. Generosity means we accept like that. So, therefore, the whole underlying principle is this mahavadanya, this being magnanimous, very magnanimous. Magnanimous, we reveal our mind in confidence, we trust, we are generous, we are just trusting. Yes, just, okay. I'll show my weaknesses, yes. And I'll try and take your advice. And like this, this spirit of being very magnanimous is in the foreground. Lord Chaitanya's movement is like that. It conquers from person to person. It is a movement that it's not spreading in numbers. There was a time that newsletters were published with bhakta points. There were book points and bhakta points. And so many bhakta points, so many new bhaktas made, and in England especially, they had a whole bhakta making machine, and they were having like bhakta points, right? And you got a bhakta point once someone was shaved up, sikha and everything, or okay, ladies in a sari with tilak and the whole thing, right? Then you got a bhakta point. Very good. But that's not really what we're after. We have to conquer people's hearts, because this movement is going from person to person, really. It is a movement, the spreading of the Sankirtan movement to every town and village. It means by conquering the heart of people in every town and village to a point that they are feeling, yes, this is wonderful. That they actually say, this is an amazing thing, this devotional service. Yes, I want more of this. So the success of the movement depends on how it reaches people's hearts. And then you can speak of real success. Not that people get swept up in some euphoria. You know, there used to be like the Goranga Bhajan band in some of the former, especially in Yugoslavia, they were doing big, and then when it was still Yugoslavia, and then they would like swing out with a rope over a crowd of 30,000 people and swing back, and everyone hysterical, and then people joined, you know, say, wow, this is too far out, this is too far out, swinging on the rope. But that in itself, these are stunts, you know. These are stunts that can also be done by some pop star, right? He can also swing out on the rope. This is not the real substance yet. The real substance, maybe the stunts are nice, but beyond it has to follow just the real substance of take more, take this, take that, take. Okay. It's when the loving exchanges amongst the Vaishnavas are experienced that we decide, that it solidifies, and I say, now I'll stay. Yes, yes, now I'm going to do it. Just philosophical conviction alone is not enough. One may be convinced by the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, but still it's very difficult to live it if there's not that loving exchange with the Vaishnavas to sort of make it possible. Yeah. And if the Vaishnavas treat us too mean, then we might be inclined to take a break, you know, say like, well, I'm going to take a vacation from all this for a while. It's too much. So it's our duty. If sometimes they say that many people leave this movement because they feel mistreated. Yeah? Many people, after some time, if they leave, the association devotees leave because they feel mistreated. So they say. I've heard it many times, whether it's true or not. But there were many who felt like that, I guess. And whether they were mistreated or not, that's not the point. Maybe they just felt like that. Maybe they're oversensitive. You know, some people, you say boo and they, you know, they are like, they cry for 3 weeks. What can you do? You know? It's like... what can be done, but still it is our challenge to improve. If one person leaves, then we should feel that somewhere we failed, yeah? somewhere we share in the responsibility, somehow or other we didn't conquer that person, somehow or other we didn't have a relationship with this person, that this one person wanted to stay. That's one way of looking at it. Anyway, these are some thoughts, maybe theoretical, and but it helps to have such thoughts in the back of one's mind. It may not always be possible on the practical plane to implement that, but if we keep that in our mind, we may actually be able to improve the atmosphere, because that's what we have, right? We are not the movement of the far out buildings, right? Even when we have some big castle or something, most cases it's pretty run down, right? I mean, I know many of these castles and the doors are falling off. I'm going to one tomorrow. Yeah. And what can be said? España, see. Nice place. Old Spanish aristocratic building with a big tower. And yeah, you know, I mean, we don't have the money to fix it up. So it's old. So we're not famous in that way. No. There are amazing buildings in the world that are being like maintained like dream palaces. You can go in India to Udaipur and stay in this palace in the lake, right? Go with a boat and you're there, and it's just an amazing palace, right? Old Mara, and you just can imagine that you're Maharaj or Maharani in India, yeah. For 3 days at top dollar, right? That you can do. And there are many such places where you can spend 3 months of salary in 3 nights and just act as if you're rich for a moment. Possible. Called 5-star hotels. We are not famous for efficiency. Sometimes they call ISKCON an organization. I have questioned it many times. I don't know. Are we an organization? I don't know. I've never noticed it. Some say we are, but I have not noticed it. I don't know what we are, but one thing, you know, devotees. Yeah, Hare Krishna. See you again. Nice you came. Hare Krishna to you too. So one thing is we should have loving exchanges. That's our only credit. That's the one thing we have, you know. Otherwise, you know, if devotees are not very friendly, then you sort of sneak in the temple to steal some prasad. It's like and get out of there. That's then the only thing. Okay? So we must have loving exchanges amongst the Vaishnavas. All right, comments, questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you were about when you were talking about the balance. I have two questions about that. How do we know we're in balance? It's easy when our health and our peace of mind is out of balance that we can detect quite easily. But the other two parts, it seems to me that we tend to kind of really drop very deeply because we actually before we detect it.
Okay. I think that although we have these three factors that we're trying to keep in balance, I guess we have to also assign priority to them. Right? We have mission, bhajan, and personal well-being. Maybe that's really the priority, because we are part of Lord Chaitanya's movement, and Lord Chaitanya desires it like that. So I think there is some priority between the three. Personal well-being, as you say, is noticeable, but also sometimes though you get sick and it takes a while to get over it, doesn't it? And then it slows you down. It can slow you down considerably. And but all right, it's true. Maybe we can easily detect body and mind when there are needs. I think we should every day make sure that our bhajan, I rather use the word bhajan than sadhana, because bhajan shows more an element of absorption. Sadhana means like I'm doing my duty, I'm doing it religiously, but bhajan is more like you get absorbed in hearing and chanting and in a devotional mood. If that's not there in your day, well, know that day is burning up reserves. There are many days where we are forced to burn up our reserves. Can you do, you know? You just get busy in external circumstance. You have a job and you have to work overtime. And you know that's going to be the next day you're going to be paying for it. And there goes your morning program. You have kids and they have the measles. So you have, I don't know. You know? You you have a long flight and it was the only cheap one and you have to take it, and it's full and you sit crammed in, and it's just difficult really chanting when you're surrounded by people who all have their little TV screen in front of them, each with a different movie, and you know there's 40 different movies going on simultaneously. Wherever you look there's a movie. I mean, it's pretty intense. You can of course look up at the ceiling, but how long can you chant like this? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Ram, Ram. Yeah, someone gets shot you know, some screen over there, a love affair going on, some knights are storming around on horses in number three. Now there's that stupid movie about the British Queen. God, is it a stupid movie? Oh, boy. I've already seen it 10 times now, at least, because it's all around on the plane everywhere. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, everyone has his external overwhelming circumstances that that push us in situation where we have to go into our reserves. So we just have to note it. This is in my reserves. I'd better do something to charge up the batteries, otherwise they're going down. Yeah. We maybe have some batteries that will last for a little while. So maybe we can afford a few days of just not really serious, real serious hearing and chanting. But know that you're depleting your batteries, and you have to do some serious recharging. So maybe start planning in a serious Ekadasi, you know, and say, in the next Ekadasi, I'm going somewhere, you know, and I'll chant. I'll just, or whatever other opportunity I have, you know. I mean, next Sunday, I'm going to lock myself up, notes with teeth on the door. Right, this door bites, don't knock, and just read. Right? Something we have to do to keep an eye on the situation. So normal, healthy bhajan should be there every day. That's our standard. But overwhelming circumstances, they force us to go into our reserves, and we have to recharge. Otherwise, if this kind of, if every day we are overwhelmed by the circumstances and it becomes a way of life, we'll become spiritually depleted. You say, but it's not possible, you know, it's not possible. I mean, you try when you have a little baby and this little baby cries, you know, all the time, and what you're going to do, right? One mother wrote to me. So I said to her, well, I'll check with some other mothers because I don't know about this, you know, myself. I mean, that's not really any. So I asked some other mothers, and one mother said, no. You can train the child. You can train them, even when they're very small. You just train them. You don't have to always jump up every time they cry. You have to train them. You have to let them cry a little sometimes, like that. And, you know, try and get them on regulation. And they get used to regulation. And then, in that way, you'll have time. Stuff. Sounded like made sense to me, and I was thinking about it, said, yeah, well, why not, you know? Why not teach these kids the regulation even from the beginning? It will only help them. They'll need it anyway. How else will they ever control their senses and their mind? You know, if they never learn to control their senses and mind, and if they get every whim, they get what they want. Of course, that within reason, everything within reason. But that means that are the circumstances really so overwhelming? We have to do something to organize time for these things. I think so. It's some sort of idea that we have also. I have to do all these things. I have to do so many things. And I guess we have to make adjustments, you know, to make plans how to improve, how to have everyday good chanting. Yeah, and then preaching, okay. After there's good bhajan, after we are physically, Prabhupada said first health. After you are healthy, after you're physically well, then good sadhana, then preaching. But the most important is preaching, then bhajan, then our health. But if we have to get to work, we have to first make sure the health is taken, is okay, mentally peaceful, and then good bhajan, good sadhana. Then we can do something to preach. That's how it works. I don't think there's an easy solution, because we all live in the world, and the world is not favorable. The world is not giving us support. So it's, everyone has to struggle somehow. But that's what we have to do. We have to keeping the balance means we have to make an endeavor and a good plan. We have to make a plan that all these three become feasible. Just like there are people who say they can't chant 16 rounds. But I usually think that that's due to bad time management. I don't think it's a spiritual defect, I think it's a material defect. It's poor organization of their life. So I look at it like that. I think oftentimes it's really not that they don't want to, it's just that they don't organize their life sufficiently. In some cases it may be because there's lack of desire to chant, but in many cases it's that people really get overwhelmed, and if they just would learn to make a plan to chant 16 rounds, then they will chant 16 rounds. Like, I know what my minimum is in the morning to comfortably chant 16 rounds. And if I chant less than 10, personally for me, if I chant less than 10 rounds in the morning, then 16 rounds becomes a stress that day. That's my minimum, 10. I don't do that very often. I'd rather chant more. I'd rather chant 16, but that's my minimum in the morning. If I'm below that, then I know now, this day, I have to make a special arrangement to chant somewhere, otherwise I'm going to get in big trouble. And then, so it has to do with what time I go to bed. Because some people say, I can't get up in the morning. My answer to that is no. It's not that you can't get up. You can't get in bed at night. That's your problem. Right? I mean, if you go to bed really early, you can't sleep anymore. Yeah? Early in the morning. You just wake up. You know, if you go to bed very early, then you'll wake up very early, and then you will have lots of time to chant in the morning. So it's not that your problem is getting up, your problem is going to bed at night. Well, and that's just a matter of organizing things. Sorry, you know, I'm going to bed now, but it's only 8 o'clock. Yep, that's it. 8 o'clock. That's it. Everybody gets used to it, you know. Just when I was a temple president in Vrindavan, the whole temple was always, you live at your work, you know, so the whole temple wanted to come all the time. So I trained people up, don't come to me during japa. There's a problem. Come at 9:30. I'm chanting my japa. So everybody knows, oh, he's really touchy about his japa. After a while, right? So after some time, the temple was trained up. Don't disturb him during his japa. He doesn't like it. Good. Very good. Necessary. Then come at nine. Come after breakfast. Yeah, that starts to make sense. But if I wouldn't have growled, then they would have spoiled my japa every day. Yeah? There's always something going on. Always. So I think one has to defend his job. What do you think? I want some feedback from working people.
No comments. Because you're right, so what's the comment?
No problem, though. Is it practical what I say? Is it feasible?
Yes.
It's easy to say for me, easy to be right.
I don't know,
but is it practical?
I don't know about 8 o'clock, but 9:30 is feasible. So yeah, I can get up.
8 o'clock is also feasible.
Well, not really.
Why not?
Because people tend to work late and then the whole social life starts at like 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then 8 o'clock you have to go to bed.
1 hour social life, so much social life.
I was in a big meeting 2 weeks ago and like a big director, blah 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 blah, so some fancy talk about this and that. And he said that he has to realize that you see your colleagues more than people at home.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, I said, this is such a thing.
Yeah.
It's true, you know. So yeah. It's 8-9 hours a day you see your colleagues and then you come home and then it's rush.
Sure. Tell me all about it.
If you do not chant in the morning, at least.
Then you have to chant at night, and then you just tell your wife when you come home, sorry, I have to still chant 4 rounds, right? And she wants to know everything that you've done during the whole day, and talk about it, and says you never share anything with me, you know? And you say, hey, you want to chant your last 4 rounds, and she just doesn't care, and she just talks anyway. And then your last round, you start them at 9:45, yeah, if you're lucky. And because you're tired, you finish them at 10:30, and then the next day you're tired again. And then you get in the rut. I know all about it. I've been there. Yeah, I went through all kinds of things in this regard. Phew, late night fights and whatnot. Yeah, sometimes I would sleep in the office. Yeah.
Strict about the morning, then the whole day is the same. Just working, then at the night, 10.
Huh.
Some people who that I know devotees who say, well, I work too much and I cannot chant anymore. It's like organizing my life. If you're strict about chanting 16 rounds, that means that if you don't chant in the morning, you chant in the evening. That means that you will be doing that, nothing else, even if you have to do some other things. That's a pretty simple. Or don't work, you know, or less, or something like that. Working less is also
an idea. Sure.
My friend is in Holland to work 4 days a week, no? Many people work 4 days.
Yeah, you can have like 4 days of 9 hours, even worse, you know, but then you have longer weekends. I would just recommend, you know, simplify your spendings and your life and work 3 days, you know, and then you have 4 days weekend, or and then you can do something else.
I'd like you to explain that always, to my children.
It's not always possible because even if you want to live simple, things get more and more expensive, and the material nature pushes us into working two people at the same time. It is not possible for people anymore to buy a house. You know? One person needs to buy it for two, so that means you have to work. where it means the mother after 3 months has to go to work again and put the child in the daycare. It's really ridiculous. And the daycare is so expensive that the money that the mother earns is just gone on the daycare. So she should stay at home. It doesn't work like that. So for all the Matajis that have a working husband, they can do babysitting for all the people who have to work to pay their house. You're getting pushed around.
Yes, it comes from the heart, you know. Can you say? He has that satisfied brahmachari look on his face, you know. These are this music, right? Music to the ears of the brahmins.
Well, maybe so, but you have to get money, and that's easy for some, not for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks for your contribution. Really appreciate it, the authenticity of the whole response. Anything else? Anybody else?
Do I like a joke?
Yeah, sure.
Prabhupada often spoke about the Eastern being in the spiritual world. So which part of the local?
Where will the spiritual, where ISKCON will be, huh? Yeah, well, on the other side from Narayan Maharaj's camp, of course. They're on the other side of the Yamuna, of course. Must be. Yeah. Now, in the spiritual world, we have... we have our... somehow or other, relationships are there. It's very difficult to figure out, you know, how it works. This thing about that we are eternally in the spiritual world, that we are now sort of in a forgotten state, and that we are returning there, which you find in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. When Swarup returns, then he's back, and Krishna receives him, and so on. But then what happens with the relationships that you made in the material world with Vaishnavas? How do they integrate? Because you may be in different corners of the spiritual world, or in different roles, in different rasas, in different... Even if you're both in Madhurya, you're still in different connections to Radha and Krishna. So how will it all work? I don't know. I guess that's an adventure. Some adventure has to remain. You cannot know everything in advance, just sitting here philosophizing. Some things have to be saved for when we get there. Otherwise, what would be the fun of going to the spiritual world? But we'll all meet there. Let's see what it will be like. Phew. Yeah, any other topic? Guranga?
No, I'm not so fitting to the mood.
Yeah, the mood's not like... Okay. We'll leave it then. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada.